What's up, dude? Everyone will be joining here in a minute.
Hey man,
What's up, dude?
it's really cool you guys are still doing this.
Doing what do you mean?
Just happy to come on and help out any way I can.
Yeah, I mean, it is your podcast too, so that's cool you're here. I mean, the others will be here in a minute.
I just don't want it to. I don't want you guys to think that I forgot that I'll forget about you guys.
I would hope not.
Don't know if
But
you saw the how well the last video did.
yeah, a little bit. But
Life is different for me now.
okay.
I
Elaborate.
I have the studio now. I rented an Audi.
Like for the day or just to celebrate
I
what?
rented an Audi. This is where I am.
Okay.
I
All
had a
right.
chick right outside the studio right now, will not stop taking pictures of my kids.
Your wife, maybe?
Just, this is life for me now. Gotta
Okay.
worry about the photogs, the paparazzi.
I don't know that that's okay, sure.
You see the getup?
Yeah,
I had to
I
start
mean,
doing this.
I don't know what you're on, man, but
But sunglasses, I got a hat. Whole
I
nine.
think it'll be okay. It's it's your camera. I think that's about the only one that's on you, so it'll be all
I
right
got
though.
concerned. And keep in mind, I can buy sunglasses, dude. I got sunglasses out the ass. But I got a little freaked out when I was at Starbucks earlier today. And I don't know if they saw the video, but they were like, Jared. White chocolate mocha.
Did you happen to give him that information when you ordered the white chocolate
Got a publicist.
mocha?
I she
You
wasn't,
have 50
I'll be
subscribers,
honest,
right?
she wasn't very interested in you guys, but she does take referrals.
Okay.
Alexandra Schutz DDS. I think DDS is the name of the company.
There's so much going on right now that maybe we
I'm
just
just
wait
trying
for
to help
the.
y'all out. They made an intro for the podcast for me.
Okay. They meaning who?
It's the Catechin, brought to you by the Nosebleed Boosters Podcast Network. Recorded live from the Sheree Thomas Memorial Podcast Studio, here's Ben Venable Esquire, Caleb Brittany Seymour, Gaydon Butts,
Hey,
and of
yo.
course, the fellas know 'em. The ladies love 'em, and the they-thems are neutral on 'em. My man, Jared, the party animal, the handsome genius, the youngest man alive, Colin.
Things are going well.
So many questions. Number one, Gaydon Butts, huh? Okay. Set aside the three sentence intro for just one person that's on the podcast, you. For someone who doesn't want to be recognized, you sure gave yourself a little intro there.
They made that.
Maybe.
I thought it was too much, but
But you didn't put it together, right? It was somebody else.
jealousy looks so ugly on you. I'm going places.
Yeah, that's just about so much. You can take the freaking glasses off. That's crazy.
How many
Run that
subscribers we
intro by
got
me one more time. Go ahead. Let me hit it one more time. I
It's the
wanna.
Catechin,
Okay, yeah, it
brought to
is.
you by the Nosebleed Boosters Podcast Network.
Accurate so far.
Recorded live from the Sheree Thomas Memorial Podcast Studio, here's Ben Venable Esquire,
Correct.
Caleb Brittany Seymour,
Can't
Gaydon
confirm.
Butts, and of
Incorrect.
course, the fellas know 'em, the ladies love 'em, and the they-thems are neutral on 'em. My man, Jared, the party animal, the handsome genius, the youngest man alive, Collins.
So ridiculous. The youngest man alive. You have children, sir.
That's what they're calling me, man. I think it's annoying. I tell them to stop.
It's like I heard the term wunderkind thrown around. Not sure what it means, but I know what it means. You know, very successful for your age, but like, it's a weird word. Yeah, maybe pump the brakes, bud. We got a little bit of views and 50 subscribers. I don't think anybody's
50 subscribers.
Just 50 or 50, well, something like that. Last time I checked, about 50, not 500, not 5,000, but 50. So each of them
then,
have to want. Yeah.
Then I guess everybody should like and subscribe.
I mean, if you want to keep up with the lifestyle, they're gonna have to.
I like to get a bunch of men together.
Okay.
Men. Mm-hmm. That are the hardest of the hard.
Mm-hmm.
And I want to be with these men.
It's the Catechin. Kentucky beat Lipscomb 97-68. Fellas, how are we feeling?
Good, man. Exactly as you want to feel after, you know, no letdown after the big Duke win. You know, it's Lipscomb. Obviously, a little interest there with the common opponent with Arkansas. Did beat them by a lot more. Dominated the game a lot more thoroughly. But again, you know, just one of those ones that you gotta go out there and win. You gotta go out there and take this one. A lot of good you can take from a 29-point win, some bad as well, but, I mean, pretty honestly, it's what you wanted to see.
I feel like this would have been a letdown spot with us not playing for a week and it being kind of in a letdown game after the Duke game coming off that high. But altogether, good game, relatively boring, but altogether I'm happy with it.
That's how these games should be, though. You know, I mean, it's... I'll say I followed Kentucky always. I mean, from the time I went there and through the end of the Cal era, I was on board. I watched every game. Every game I could. You know,
mm-hmm.
I don't know the last time I was this hungry for another game. This week off has been torturous. I was so ready to see them play again, and it is so nice. You know, I was thinking too, like maybe. This is an opportunity for a letdown. I sort of saw that with the women the other day. Big emotional win over Louisville, followed up by a win, but not quite to the best of their ability against that level of opponent. And so it was really refreshing to see, especially Jackson, come out hot after.
Yeah.
Not that he played poorly against Duke, but a slow offensive performance, and he totally turned that around. And so this is how I like feeling against. Teams that are in the triple digits in KenPom, you know.
Yeah.
Lead start to finish. We led for 38 minutes, 33 seconds, tied for a minute. You know,
yeah.
I mean, that's how that should feel.
I mean, I think there were some, you know, obviously you had guys like you said, you mentioned Jackson played really well. I was impressed with Brea. I had 7 boards. He's not usually a big rebounder, but he did well off the, you know, rebounding out of his minutes there. A couple things I didn't love is the ball movement seemed to really be iso ball at times, more so than any other game we've seen this year. There's only 10 assists on like 30 buckets or something like that. So that, I mean, you can out-athlete Lipscomb, and I get it. You know, it's a 29-point win in which they ended on like a 13-2 run, so it was even worse than that for a while. But just, you know, some things to look at is it feel like the second-half defense, well, so-so. The assists were low. Yeah, it's 10 assists on 34 buckets. So, I mean, again, nitpicking, it's Lipscomb. They came out, they did their work. And, again, different guys every night. You know, Carr kind of dominated the Duke game down the stretch. He goes 1 for 5 for 2 points in 25 minutes. He contributed elsewhere. But, again, speaks to how it can be a different guy every night. And it doesn't have to necessarily be the same guy even, you know, over the course of 3 or 4 games. It can, you know, shift and rotate.
How much of it? Feeling like iso ball, do you think had to do with them having a different offensive focus for this game versus just the drawn up motion stuff that we've seen in games past?
I don't know. I mean, I know even early on we identified at halftime, like, wow, they've only had 6 assists. And in fact, they had fewer in the second half. I mean, you end up with 10, that means 4.
4, yeah.
But also, it's not like they needed ball movement to get open either. I mean, we shot almost 50% from three, spread the ball around pretty well. It was just, not just a little different. I mean, it's sort of, to me, in the same way it can be, we can beat you with any one of a number of guys. It's encouraging. Maybe we can beat you with any one of a number of play styles, and that's good to see.
One thing I thought it might be is that they only turned the ball over six times, Lipscomb did, and that doesn't lead for a lot of transition, which you get a lot of the whip-around passes, the extra pass, even on the three-point line, stuff like that. So I think a lot of times it was just a guy going by. Lamont had a couple where he just dribble-drive past somebody, or he did hit a few threes. I mean, you shoot 55% overall, basically 48% from three. I mean, there's not a whole lot to beef about. It just was interesting that it was definitely a low on the seasons for the assists. For the assist to buckets, and then turnovers weren't bad, only eight, but again, we only forced six. And I don't even know how many of those were actually forced versus like unforced, you know. But not a lot of, I didn't see fast break points have a chance to see, but I would imagine it'd have to be somewhat low because they didn't turn the ball over that much. And, you know, a lot of our points come off of those pick six type things.
Lip said after the game that this Kentucky offense was the best power four offense he's seen since he's been a head coach at Lipscomb. Which is nice to hear, but also, what's this non-power four offense that he's played against that's better than
right.
And why qualify that? Yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah.
We had 14 fast break points. I don't know how that compares to our other couple games, but yeah, it does seem, I mean, in a normal game, it seems like we have more than, say, seven possessions where we get out and transition and score quickly, so.
Yeah, I guess.
Seems slow there, but.
I like to,
also, speaking of the shout
fast
out,
break. The Colin Chandler long snap to Amari Williams on the fast break. It was sweet. Good to see him.
Who knew we had a potential dual sport athlete?
Stoops might have to give him a call.
Let's see.
He may save Mark's career.
Perhaps. Okay. Here we go.
Shout out Lamont Butler also. The three ball isn't a huge part of his game normally. He went 3 of 3. Brea went 3 of 3 from behind the line. Robinson hit 3 of 6, away 1 of 1. I mean, it makes for a nice, nice stat line in the end.
Yeah.
If Lamont Butler's making 3-point shots consistently, like this team won't lose if you have even Lamont making shots.
And like the that. Kind of shots he was hitting too, those, I mean, they weren't just like wide open clean. He was making his own shot.
Yeah, right.
And he drove to the hole well too. I mean, like he played really well. I felt like he was assertive. I was really impressed with his game too, because it kind of seemed like he couldn't get into a great rhythm against Duke, but basically everyone that played well. I mean, again, Carr had a little bit of a down game, but again, he, you know, still had some rebounds, played some defense, but yeah, he probably had his worst game that he's had so far, but didn't need him to do anything else.
Yeah, well, and he was tied for the highest plus minus. I mean, plus minus has major flaws as a metric, but he was tied with Robinson for the highest plus minus on the team.
Yeah, they did go on the runs when he was on the floor. So.
Right, yeah, and it's sort of something that I've talked about in the burner a little bit, that is, on Evan Mia, there's a discrepancy between the stats that look only at how the team performs while Carr's on the floor,
okay,
in which he's number one on the team. And the stats that look at, I mean, it's sort of the same calculation of the value you provide to the team, but that one doesn't look at how the score changes. It instead looks at your box score, where he doesn't lead the team. So I wonder if it's just another example of Carr being a positive influence, a glue guy, you know, makes the team run. We as a team play well when he's playing, whether or not he's playing well.
Right.
It's an interesting way to look at two different stats that are ultimately trying to determine the same thing, but get there in different ways and have different results.
For sure. Now, he definitely has an impact, you know, and that's one thing that Pope's really keen on, is he knows those things. He's like, he talked about Jackson after the Duke game, you know what I mean? He made a massive impact just by entering the gym, you know, just his, the gravity he pulls. And Carr's the same way, you know, they have to keep an eye on him all three levels of the floor. So even though he does, you know, doesn't put up as much offensively this game, he still definitely had that impact.
I love Jackson's game, man.
It's so smooth, man.
He hit the step back tonight into the 3-point. So nice. Like I think we've said privately, where I've said Jackson is so smooth that it's almost like he looks slow, but he's not slow. It just looks so smooth and natural to him. And when he gets going, man, he gets going.
Oh, that's cool, yeah. I love his game, honestly. I mean, you got the 7 boards, too. Your effort was there, yeah, scoring at all 3 levels. It's probably the best game so far, just to get right as well.
Yeah, that's pretty good. OA, 4 boards, J-Rob, 7, Omari, 11, though I expect him to have a bunch. Brea, 7, and Garrison, 5. I mean, that's another thing that we're spreading around well.
Yeah, rebounding at all positions at the guard line and the front line, for sure.
Ben, did you know that Kobe Brea has not shot a free throw all year?
Has he not, really?
We looked at that. Yeah, he doesn't shoot very many in his career. He had like 11 all. He had a season where he went 100% from the foul line, but it was only 7 for 7 his like junior year, I think. No foul shots being taken.
Yeah, this season. He's 3 for 3 this season. But still, that's like nothing.
Oh. I was lied by someone who I thought was my friend.
I want to know, and I'll find this out now, if we still have any players with no turnovers. And we do. Brea on the season, no turnovers. Ansley Almanor on the season, no turnovers.
Well, those are the guys who are just, you know.
Yeah, right. And some of that comes down to their role. And maybe in the same way that you have like an arm punt in football, you know, throw it all the way down the field, it gets intercepted. Maybe you have like a missed shot turnover for shooters that we don't expect you to dribble. We don't expect you to pass. We just want you to shoot. You know, if a shot is bad, maybe it's a shot turnover. But both those guys, that's impressive.
Well, guys, I don't know how much more you want to dive deep into the Lipscomb game, but I'm still buzzing off of Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean, it was a movie, man. I mean, you saw the journey. It was literally a movie from the jump. But yeah, it was insane. And it's, you know, leading into this game, it's a huge deal to not have a letdown like that, because it's a definition. I mean, I was going to look at the upcoming schedule, and it's Lipscomb obviously tonight, then Jackson State, Western, Georgia State, and then it's Clemson and Gonzaga. But this is like a stretch where you just go out, take care of your business for the next 5. But that Duke one's going to be the one that holds the most weight, obviously. And it was, I mean, we were there. It was insane. I mean, yeah, great game.
So I always, especially when I go to a game or if I watch it at a bar or something, I'll go home and rewatch it if it's a game I care about. And just to make sure I see it from a good neutral sideline angle. Here, when we were there, we were behind the basket. I was curious to see how I felt about the crowd. I mean, when we were there, it felt like more Kentucky fans, but we were also sitting with a bunch of Kentucky fans, so I wasn't sure how much of an effect that had. I was curious to see if I'd feel the same way about the whistle in the first half. When we were there, it felt like we were really getting screwed, and I was just curious, you know, when I'm not in a highly emotional state watching it with 20,000 of my closest friends, if I felt the same way. And one thing I gathered on the rewatch is on the TV, you had no sense of crowd noise.
That's a bummer.
I mean, every now and then you'd get part of a chant, but not really. I mean, people on KS board were talking about how epic the first Go Big Blue chant was. And it was. It was huge. It was loud. The players have talked about it. I mean, and I didn't even hear it on TV. I know some broadcasters are better about having some like crowd noise mics.
Mm-hmm.
I just don't know. Instead, we got to listen to Jay Billis.
I wish we knew the 4 guys who started that first Go Big Blue chant.
If only.
Wish we knew those 4. Know,
it is.
They're probably very handsome.
Maybe. Some of us. All of it, whatever. No, but like, I think one thing too, if you think about it, like, it's not like the one thing I noticed is it's not like the crowd was like on defense, like they were, you know, like, oh, like loud the whole time. It was mostly the moments, right? And it would be a timeout or at a break. And so that would make sense that you didn't really come through on TV, just because it wasn't like, it's a little different style crowd. Like, I'm used to, you know, like the spectrum being like, but this, I mean, it was still sick and it was really loud at times. It was just more of a, like, we'd let it out as it happened. You know what I mean? Like, at the timeout, we take the lead, or they call timeout, or whatever. There's a break, dead ball, stuff like that. I thought it got plenty loud, though. And a lot of Duke fans. I mean, we were sitting there a few, you know. Like, but it'd be your own people, though, because, you know, the only people we got into a scuffle with was Kentucky fans a little bit. But, you know.
Yeah, Ben, do you have anything? Do you have anything to share about any run-ins with other Kentucky fans?
Yeah, I was chastised for my use of profanity. Actually, Caleb was initially. gentlemen in front of us, after a particularly egregious call where I used some not so nice words to the ref, and I'd been yelling all game. I mean, I'd already lost my voice at this point, but it was one of those moments where I screamed at the refs, and the exact moment the rest of the crowd just like stopped yelling, and so my voice stood out. And this guy turned around, pushes Caleb in the chest, and said, "I'm about tired of hearing that word in my ear."
Which,
and old guy, whatever. I mean, I get that some people don't swear and don't like to hear that. But I put my hand on his back. I'm like, "Hey, it was me. Whatever. I'm sorry." And then he started saying he was gonna wear my ass out if I said it again. And I'm like, "Whatever, dude." And then later, it was even a good thing. Like he turned around and was high-fiving us, and I didn't say anything in one moment, and he said, "Oh, you're keeping your mouth shut now, aren't you?" And it's like, dude, I'm not – if I was afraid of you, I would have let Caleb continue to take the blame for this.
That's the craziest part, is like, not only did I swear in that dude's ear like 5 million times, I hit him in the head one time trying to high-five his friend after we took the lead. I'm like, I rocked him too. That hat went flying, bro. I didn't say nothing, but he turned around and was ready to like bow up on Caleb.
The funny thing is, like, the guy was cool. Like, he was high-fiving us all game, even before, immediately after, maybe even more so after, certainly at the end of the game. And we saw him in the parking garage, and he honked and waved. I mean, maybe this guy was just as stressed out at the moment as I was. I mean, I think this was, like, 72-72 time.
So
tensions may have been high, and he just...
He was
I think it was a little before that, though. Yeah, it was right around there, though, because Kerr missed that, like, that heat check with, like, 20. Yeah, when it was 72 all. Yeah, it was right around there, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, I think it was just tensions are high, and he wasn't happy to hear me swearing. But
I think he started coming around at the end because he was probably just kept thinking about that moment again and again through the game. It was probably uncomfortable, and then he started overcompensating with friendliness.
Yeah, probably.
Hey, that's what, when you got down a little bit to the Duke fan, like, because I could hear the guy behind me, like, in my ears getting louder and louder, because we had been up for a sec, and I was like, I'm going to turn around, so that guy's getting closer to me. I had to, you know, just give him a little props, like, oh, man, it's a good Duke team, man, what do you think? And then by the end of it, you know, they're giving us sad knuckles on the way out, but it was cool. Kansas fans were a little saltier than the Duke fans, it seemed like, on the way out, but that was, I mean, I was just on their ass a little bit, but, you know, don't play Michigan State so close.
My favorite Duke chirp from the night was Kentucky went to inbound the ball, and we didn't have somebody to take the ball out. And then a girl yells, "Where's your organization, Kentucky?" She got us, boys.
He thought she was on her. She looked around like, hell yeah. Fucking said it.
It was so quiet, too. I was looking back at her, and she's just...
That was good, though. Oh, my gosh. Well, that was so much fun. Like, they just kept battling. And you know,
people keep talking about Jackson's performance. I think the worst performance of that night was Gizmo. He was the frisbee catching dog who proceeded
to catch
a single frisbee.
Trash. Absolutely just dropping it all. It was like a pity laugh or pity clap at the end. That was crazy bad.
I'm sure he was a good dog. But he was not good at catching frisbees. He sub 50% easy, and they brought out. I don't know if it was supposed to be a backup dog or if the intention all along was to have them both. But even the backup dog, awful, just not good at. I mean, good dog, not a good frisbee catcher.
Absolutely, they had little booties on. Yeah. They had little booties on their paws. I'm assuming not to damage the floor, but I don't know if that was causing any sort of grip issues on the jumps, but it was hitting them in the mouth. You got to bring that down.
I'd argue that if you are committed to go and do a basketball halftime show, mm-hmm. you should know that you're going to have to wear booties, and you should know that how, if at all, that's going to affect the dog's ability to perform. I mean, it's
some of us aren't
fundamental
the right
to the job.
Put it down. Yeah. That's what somebody yelled. It was me.
What'd you say?
So put it down. That's when somebody yelled, that was me.
Yo. But it was like not just like he missed one. It was like, oh, he'll get the next one. Like he was giving him like – he started tossing him like the warm-up lobs and dog was just like teething him, you know, just gritting him off his face, like just bouncing. Today, we got to mention, though, the one kid that won the tic-tac-toe shooting thing, you know, beat the Duke whistle. He was pretty – that kid was pretty dope. Yeah,
That was – I mean, like I said, at the beginning of the game, and it wasn't just where we were sitting because that guy also was making jokes about the Duke whistle. Mm-hmm. And on rewatch, I felt a little better about it. There were some calls I didn't like, especially in the first half. The Creasa block charge call I thought was still pretty bad.
You went flying, dude.
There was one which I know is one I yelled about in the game. It was Carr and Knipple both went to rebound a ball. Carr mm-hmm. got there first. They collided and both fell down, and they called a foul on Carr. I thought that was still pretty bad. But otherwise, it wasn't as slanted as I remembered. I think they were inconsistent with it. But definitely in the second half, I felt like it was relatively neutral.
In the first half, it was like 9 fouls. We hit 19 fouls before they hit 5, I recall. Yeah, we had a lot of calls towards the end, like to even it up at the half, as refs do. But it was, for a minute there, that whistle was hot on Kentucky.
I noted we got our 7th team foul with more than 9 minutes to go mm-hmm. in the first. And like that's pretty bad, especially because we're not a big fouling team. I mean, what did we have tonight? Obviously, the quality of the competition is different. You would expect fewer, but like we are not a heavy fouling team, so it's crazy that. And I think we're actually among the best in the country. Let's see, for our defense is 4th best in the country at free throws allowed to field goals allowed. I mean, uh-huh. so our opponents shoot very few free throws. So we're not a big fouling team, and it is crazy that with only a quarter of the way into the game, Duke's in the bonus.
Yeah.
Did Billis seem as slanted as what people online are saying, you think?
I don't think he was as egregious as Jay Williams. And usually I think Billis does a good job at being pretty objective. I think he was glazing Cooper Flag, but I guess that's to be expected. Yeah. But I also thought he was a little worse than he usually is. And I think people just saw more of it because he's calling the whole game, whereas you get Jay Williams for a little bit at halftime and a little bit post game and a little bit TikToks he makes post game. And you get Billis for 40 minutes. So you're just exposed to it more?
I feel like his energy was just low in regards to calling both sides of that game. Like, yeah, I get the narrative as like Cooper Flagg's the guy. It is ESPN. It is a big deal. Champions Classic. I understand. And the kid, hey, worth the price of admission. He really is that good. Like, take nothing away from him. I mean, my goodness. But when I went back and watched it, it kind of felt like, you know, even towards the end when he was like, well, yeah, it looks like Kentucky's going to do it. It almost sounded like he was kind of bummed. Maybe not so much slanted in his opinions, but just the energy wasn't super – like, I feel like it would have been different, you know, if it was the other way around. He might have been a little more psyched. But
he does a better job at it than I would do. If it were me on there, I'd be handling that much worse. Even if I was getting paid the money Jay Billis was.
Sure.
I'd be furious if my team lost.
He's not supposed to have a team.
Better man than me. The one thing that is a little bit annoying, but I get it, is that the post-game coverage, no matter who it is more so just talking about Duke, even after Kentucky won. So we've been on the other end of this. So it feels like just this team and maybe just Pope in general, maybe just kind of got to earn their stripes with the media in order. I mean, just the narrative isn't built around us this season. And maybe that's where we want them.
Yeah. I think it's shifted pretty heavily, though. I mean, over the week, I mean, it's, you know, Kentucky's a contender at this point, top 10 AP. I mean, it definitely did a lot of good. But I get what you're saying still. It doesn't feel like, you know, like you said, you've been on the other end of it before, and I think that they'll continue to do it. Like, it's funny that everyone seems to want to come around to what we've been saying since, you know, my guy got hired, but hey.
I think some of it is that the NBA, for better or worse, has become so driven by stars. I mean, yeah. it's not. I mean, of course, it's a team sport, but the coverage is Jason Tatum and Luka and SGA and Jokic and Giannis. I mean, it's very much star power driven.
Right.
And I think that's what Jay Williams was getting at. I think he's insufferable, and this was an awful video he made. But what he's saying is, like, that is what currently sells in basketball. And yeah. I think maybe our lack of star power, you know, and yeah. not that we don't have guys capable of being stars, because I don't believe that. But the fact that, like, we say it could be anyone any given night. Well, for Duke, I don't know that it could be anyone any given night. It'll be Cooper Flagg. It's the Cooper Flagg show this year. And we've had that. Even if Cal says AD scored the fourth most points on the team, whatever, it's like he was the star on that team. You know, we've had our stars. I'm sure we've been the recipient of undeserved coverage as a result of that.
Oh, the 38-1 year?
It's kind of funny to see it from the other end.
The 38-1 year, you couldn't watch a college basketball game without Kentucky being mentioned in a game we weren't even playing in.
Right.
And I loved it. So we're not the main characters right now, but that'll change.
To go up to 9 is pretty impressive, though, especially where, what did he start, 23rd in the first bowl, up to, like, 17th or whatever, and 16th, whatever it was.
I think I saw this was UK's biggest jump in the AP poll in history.
Yeah, I was going to say it's pretty
significant. The biggest week-to-week jump.
Well, I don't know if we've been this severely underrated before. So,
a lot of doubters,
I don't know
yeah.
how many opportunities we've had for a jump like this, but it's
welcome. We've been rated poorly before, but they've been right about it. It's just
correct.
We've never been rated poorly and then
rated poorly in the opposite direction.
Yeah, right.
So as far as... I'm sorry, did you have any more Duke thoughts?
Just a couple others. So these are sort of related, I guess. It's just I appreciate our ability, and maybe it's more Pope's ability, to keep these guys in a good mental state. I think we saw that in the journey and then how he spoke to them at halftime, how he spoke to them in timeouts. But, like, we started 5 for 5 from 3. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Cannot miss. Then we went 1 for 9. And, like, I think a lot of teams, I don't have how that tracked with where our lead went, but we were down 10 in the first half. Then in the second half, we got it down to 4. But that wasn't our comeback, because after that, we fell down 9 again. The ability to have a team that's able to keep coming and start to close that gap and not get frustrated when the gap widens a little bit back up and not give up and get defeated is huge. And I just can't – I mean, I talk over and over about how excited I am to have this guy as our coach, but then you see something like the journey and see how he speaks to the team at halftime in timeouts. At some point, Jackson got pulled out and he went to the bench and Pope sort of grabbed him by the arm, wanted to say something real quick. And it's like, this is a guy that knows what to say and how to keep his guys in a good mental state, emotional state for how he wants them to be playing.
They don't play afraid, like, over looking over the show. And I've seen some people say that he's not hard enough on his players. He's not he's a new age coach. He gets it. He demands a lot. His standard is very high, but also he's super empowering to the players. And I think that's exactly what you're kind of. I mean, that's how you have games where it takes a ton of energy to be down 9-10 and fight back to 2-3. You know, tie the game up. To get over, that's even harder. To do it a couple times is absolutely taxing. To play that hard of defense, to get stops, you know. So I love his approach to things. I think it's more and more what you're going to see if you want to be successful as a coach. You're going to have that. Rather than just the fear factor, more than like the love, the care factor, and then a high standard. I think that's where he differentiates himself from a lot of coaches.
I saw a couple interviews with players, and they were asking him, like, what did you think about him coming into the half and asking what you saw? And a couple of them said, like, yeah, that's different. And I was thinking, like, how would I feel vibe-wise if a coach came in and was obviously worried and was yelling and whatever and handling it poorly versus coming in saying, hey, let's talk about it. At no point in there did he, and obviously you wouldn't intentionally tell your team, like, it's over, we're screwed. But But at no point did he have anything other than ultimate faith that they would, you know, this is what we have to do. We do these things, we win.
Yeah.
And I think that's such a helpful approach.
What a relief it is to have a guy who, down the stretch or even in tight games, that you can just sort of trust can handle the situation, and that you're not just constantly frustrated and baffled by their decisions. Like, what a pleasure it is to watch a team coached by this man.
And the whole staff, right? Like, you see AB in there talking about championship chest. You got Fox in there gassing guys up and checking in with guys as they're coming off the floor, going on the floor, stuff like that. I mean, it does take – it takes them all, you know what I mean? And I think it's just the empowerment of it. I think that we're still scratching the surface of what this team can be, you know? And that's pretty crazy considering. But you've got, you know, Jackson State's probably the worst team to play all year. Western, Georgia State. But then it gets Clemson and Gonzaga, and those two games are massive. Going forward, which is, you know, looking ahead a little bit.
Yeah.
That Duke test was huge.
And then, so, you know, looking forward into it, we have a 5-game stretch. Let's give us the Colgate win. Okay? I think we beat Toothpaste U. But we play Clemson, Gonzaga, Louisville, and Ohio State. How do you think those 4 games go? What do you think our record is in those 4 games?
Home run is 4-0, but I think 3-1 probably.
I would take 3-1.
Yeah, I'd say 3-1. I mean, and it's not like a for sure we lose to Gonzaga thing. I've watched them a couple of times. I think they look really good, but after the Duke game, I certainly can't count these guys out, right? Like right now, Duke
crazy.
Duke is KenPom 4, Gonzaga's KenPom 3.
They're gonna show out.
The Clemson game was the one I was more thinking the one. I actually think they'll beat Gonzaga in Seattle. It seems like I like the matchup better at Clemson, and it's the first true road game. That'll be a student section. Yep. That'll be a true home crowd. Like, I know there's fans at the semi away game in Seattle, but it's still not the Kennel. You know, that I genuinely think that's going to be the biggest test so far, because, you know, they're not probably the team they were last year. They did just get waxed by Boise. But it is a home game, and they're playing Kentucky. You know, it's on the map now, number 9, the top 10 yep. Kentucky, assuming so. So that was the one I actually thought they might drop.
And apparently team. Little John gets really loud. It's apparently the acoustics are good. The fan base is good and vibrant. So that should be a good, exciting game. We very easily could drop that one too. I don't know. I'm curious to see how the fan base responds to the first loss. But
yeah,
it'll come at some it'll come at some point. But like,
is Little John, is that a that's the name of their arena, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
is that a Robin Hood reference?
No idea.
Robin Hood and Little John going back and forth. Is that a stock investing app, Little John?
Yeah, they might freeze it up if we do too well.
9,000 person multi-seat arena.
How far away is that from? That's not that far from.
It's like a day's drive.
Yeah. Okay. That's not that bad. I can say we could make that one work. I mean, I don't think y'all boys are gonna fly out here to Seattle to watch that game against Gonzaga, but you know, you could.
It's very close to Christmas.
It is.
If my
yeah.
kids want gifts, I might not be able to swing that one. So
named after James C. Little John, class of 1908, Clemson's first business manager.
Little John's that old? That's crazy.
What?
And still rapping?
Yeah.
Okay. So let's say we go 2-2 in those worst case scenarios, and what, we drop 4
Clemson and Gonzaga.
4 SEC games.
Yeah.
I mean, that's so-so. I don't think that's too positive. I don't think that's too negative for this team. 6 losses.
If they find a way through these next 5 unscathed, it's going to get real interesting. I mean, it's going to be interesting either way, but like, I mean, Gonzaga, and if you got a Duke win and Gonzaga win before December 11th, that's pretty crazy. Yeah.
Well, in conference, we get Alabama twice and Tennessee twice.
You get Auburn too.
We get Auburn at home,
which is good.
So I don't think 4 is too crazy. I think 4 might be close. I mean, you would hope you split the Tennessee and Alabama games, but let's say you go 1-3, maybe 5 losses. If I'm being a
yeah, I, KenPom has us at 10-8 in conference.
So 21-10 overall, yeah.
That feels rude. KenPom also has us at 19 right now.
Well, the other thing is KenPom for most of the season will continue to use previous year's data to some extent.
Mm.
I mean, I think he said it totally drops out after 27 games. And the weight, a long time. It is, but the weight of it drops each game. Mm. It's just the 28th game, I think, is the first one where it plays no role at all. And obviously with a totally new team, new coach, new style, no returning players.
It's not useless.
I think he said that it is useful for kind of anchoring like almost a floor and a ceiling for your team. You know, if you're middle of nowhere, you play a good first game, but you still have normal middle of nowhere you players and middle of nowhere you quality coach, you probably are more likely within the range of what your previous team was. So I think he's looked at it and found that it is a stabilizing factor, even with some of this total roster turnover.
Yeah.
But it means what can you really glean from last year's UK team on this year's?
So I bet you mean though, because doing that would be banking that a Kentucky team would be pretty good. So
right,
yeah, that's useful.
What I think would be interesting is if there would be a way to take his current ratings as they are, and use last year's Kentucky's data as the anchoring point for this year's Arkansas team to see if that would be more or less accurate than what he has.
It's probably similar, right? Like, I mean, at that point, it'd be the same players.
Same coach, same style, three of the same players. So I don't know. It's interesting thought experiment.
Well, a lot of the, like, if you look at his projections, like, you know, it has us at 10 losses, but, like, Clemson being, like, a toss-up. You know, Gonzaga is obviously the lowest percentage of win. Like, you know, that's a 24% chance is what he says, you know, with his numbers. But the rest of them is, like, Mississippi State, 80-77. Tennessee's, right. You know, that one. But most of them are pretty much a toss-up one way or the other. So I think it's still kind of – obviously it's finding its way still, like, statistically. I think it's going to be – I don't see 5 losses. I'm, you know, maybe – if, you know, I mean, they're going to lose some games, but, like, they didn't lose to Duke, so. And, dang, Lipscomb's just a top 150. Okay.
I'm just judging from previous years. There's these SEC road games can really shake up some teams. And also, these guys, although they do have experience playing in road environments and everything, it's a completely different ball game when you're wearing a Kentucky jersey and you're playing an away game. That's why the Clemson game concerns me a little bit, because this
what do you mean
just
by that?
Duke and we're going on the road.
Just because it's the biggest brand around, and that's why like it looks like the best shot, or is it the arena in the SEC?
One man once said, "We're every team's Super Bowl."
Okay, I mean, as far as like road environment, I think our guys have been in it. I mean, I know Lamont Butler certainly has.
Sure.
You know, the Pit twice a year, the Spectrum twice a year.
Yes,
you know, things like that.
When that's nearly every single road game you're playing, you're getting that team's best shot and their best crowd, and maybe
sure,
their only sell out of the season.
As someone who also went to another SEC school and went to a lot of basketball games there, the way that they pack the arena out for Kentucky is different from any other school.
Okay, that's fair.
The way they cheer is different from any other school. It is, I mean, even as a fan just watching it, it is night and day difference between another SEC opponent and Kentucky playing there.
Fair enough, and that makes sense. That would be something I would have no idea, because you know, first season in the SEC here as well. That makes sense.
And that's regardless of if we're any good or not. I mean, that isn't like a cocky.
No, I believe it's the biggest brand in all college sports. It's almost
worse when we're not good, because then they're like, holy shit, we can beat Kentucky this year. And so they turn out even more, you know. It's,
joke's on you. We sucked anyways.
But, yeah, right. Enjoy that quad 3 win.
Damn.
I lost to North Carolina Wilmington. You can't hurt me anymore.
Right.
Nothing hurts anymore.
Dude, this is a conference loss that is miles better than some of these others.
Lost to UNCW at home.
Isn't that what the name's Coach Cal's alma mater?
believe so.
Yeah, I think it is.
That's so nice of him to just dap him up on the way out, you know?
The bad man can't hurt me anymore. The bad man can't hurt me anymore.
His press conferences, man, are wild. We don't need to talk about them, but I owe you guys an apology. I was like, no, you guys are crazy. Hall of Fame coach. How are you going to get rid of this guy? No.
I showed Braden Calipari's press conference last year after the Auburn win. I don't know if you remember that one, but that was him. That was peak of ugliness between him and the fan base.
It was so confrontational. It was just like, and that was after a win, right? They won that game.
Sure was.
Oh, cool. Yeah, he comes out and like wants to fight.
I don't want to dwell on Cal, sure. But he's already had kind of an adversarial relationship with some of the media there. Which is interesting. I don't know any of their media, like maybe they're partially to blame for that. You know, it is cinema.
It's real nice having Coach Pope at the podium after games. I'll say that. Having his players give opening statements, things like that. I really like that. You know, I like that. I like how you see in the journey, he walks in the locker room, he says, talk to me. Like they're talking before he walks in. You know, it's a real night and day thing. So, yeah, you're right. Let's not focus on that. But Pope, man, that guy is – it's really nice to not have to, you know, not cheer for him anymore.
Totally unrelated. I just still have our Ken Pom pulled up.
Mm-hmm.
We are – let's see, how many D1 teams are there?
334 or something like that?
364.
Oh, 364. Jeez.
We are number 355 in the country in terms of our defense forcing non-steal turnovers at like half the D1 average per game. We get four. We give up six.
Like dead ball teams. Turnovers?
Just any turnover that is not a steal. I assume that's charge, out of bounds, double dribble.
Okay.
You know, any turnover that's not a steal, we are at 4%.
What about live ball steals? Where are you at on that?
Steals, our defense is just under average.
Okay.
But it's just a funny, weird statistic.
That is interesting because I guess they don't take it a ton. Well, when Kirk Reese goes like 16 feet in the air off of a knee to the chest in the Duke game, like, and they don't get a charge on that, you're not going to, I mean.
Yeah, right.
It's unreal.
So just some ending grab bag stuff. You guys have any thoughts on the Kentucky-Murray State football game?
No.
I hope not.
It was one of the games of all time. Yeah, it was not. The freshman kid came in, threw that thing around a little bit, but I mean, that's a really bad FCS team versus honestly like a pretty bad Kentucky team. And I just want the season to be over, honestly. I'm just ready. Tie it up, put a bow on it. Not going to a bowl. You know, y'all say they're going to beat Louisville. We'll see, probably, because I'm always wrong about this stuff.
I was kind of disappointed. Like, I thought we were going to start bowling. I thought that, I mean, people were like excited to see him. That was announced in the week, and I guess on Friday, Brock got cleared, and they decided and with like 24 hours notice that he was going to be good to go. Maybe this says a lot about how I feel about the season, but I'm ready to give up on the season and see what we have going forward. And yeah. I was sort of disappointed that that isn't what we did. I mean, I don't recall when we put Bully in. Maybe I don't know if it was after the half or what, but I kind of wanted to see him play a game. You know, to me, that's kind of what this late. I mean, other conferences shit on us all the time, the SEC for having these late season tune ups.
Play your ninth conference team and stop bitching. Yeah.
And I kind of like when the teams use those as an opportunity to play guys that don't usually play, especially at the end of the year when it's like, all right, what are we gonna have next year? Alabama used this opportunity to play their second string, their third string, and people kind of like what they saw from the third string. So like there was real benefit from doing that. And I feel like you lose that a little bit when you let Brock go out there, get you up, and then you're not playing a full game
real
scenario where you're relying on Cutter Bowley to score.
Yeah, he still went 10 or 14, but in no pressure situation whatsoever for a $130, couple right. touchdowns, no picks. About he basically identical stats without the interception to Brock. But, like, again, it's different reps when the score is different. Whether you want it to be or not, it is different. Like, you go in there 0-0, you go put those first two TDs on the board, it's a bigger deal than you put the last two when you're up 44 to nothing, you know? But it was an ugly game throughout. I mean, nothing really else to say about it. But, I mean, again, I can't stand those games. Especially when you hear Kirby Smart over here just mouthing off about what the committee doesn't know what they're talking about. Well, don't play an FCS team in week 13 or whatever this is, or 10. Like, it's tough, but, like, it's not, I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
And to be clear, like, I know I was comparing to Alabama. Alabama played Milroe a little bit. I mean, he had 16 passes, almost 200 yards. It's not like Alabama threw their young guns in there and said, go for it. Win us this game, because they also got a big lead and then sort of let them play.
They're also not 1-6 in the SEC. So.
Exactly. Yeah.
Okay, so Texas opened as a 20.5-point favorite. Are we taking the over or the under?
Kentucky will cover. They've covered in basically every big game besides South Carolina.
Yeah, I feel what
hammer in the over.
You think they're gonna lose by more than 20?
Yeah.
I don't think they will. Who's beating them by that much besides South Carolina? I guess Florida did, huh? Florida beat the brakes off of them.
Never mind. We have given up.
I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Kentucky covers that, but
they covered Tennessee, covered Vandy. No, they didn't cover Vandy, my bad. That was about tough.
They covered Georgia.
Yeah.
I mean our defense is good enough. Assuming everyone is playing and hasn't given up and declared they're entering the portal and whatever. Our defense is good enough that we could conceivably hold Texas to well below their scoring average. I don't know what that is.
Texas just beat Florida 49-17.
Pardon?
Yeah.
Texas just beat Florida 49-17.
I don't know. I think for as poorly as we perform often, and as few big games as Stoop actually wins, he does get the guys to show up for big games, and especially the defense tends to play well. So I'm optimistic. I don't know. I mean, I'll watch it. Not really gonna be losing my mind cheering for it. Not gonna be in a depressed state anymore so than I am now if we lose.
Do you guys want to debut the bet wheel?
On the 20.5? Oh, gosh.
On 20.5.
Bro, I've seen that wheel. I don't want to do like 90% of the stuff on that wheel.
All right.
I don't want to do anything.
I'll just give them the audience what the options are.
The potential outcomes, yeah.
Ben, I'm not sure if you even know the what the potential options are for the bet
wheel. I saw them briefly, which is why I'm uninterested in participating in the bet wheel.
Yeah, so this...
There is the classic foot bet where the loser would have to post a photo of their feet online. I've thought about also just having it where your feet are your avatar for a full episode. I don't know if that sounds like a lot of fun to me. There's a karaoke bet where the loser has to do a karaoke song. Full on standing bet. That one's just easy. You can't adjust the frame, so you just have to stand up for a full episode. Fork and toaster for 10 seconds. I'll explain that later. Volunteer at a homeless shelter or soup kitchen. I don't know why Ben doesn't want to do that.
In there.
Do a get ready with me video.
That one is bro.
And then finally, you have just a good old puppet where my wife is making puppets of all of us. And then you would just have to be out of frame and be holding up your puppet duplicate.
Can we do that anyway? Like, no bet required. I would just gladly.
No, it's because sometimes there's a risk and a reward with these. So that's the point sure of wheel. the bet wheel.
That one is you get to be a puppet.
Winner
is permitted to be a puppet for an episode.
You get to be a puppet. You get to volunteer at a homeless shelter. You get to show your feet online.
There's only two of those that I just can't do it. Like, I want to do it, but, like, it's the get ready with me video that I'd rather do almost anything then, just because it, for obvious reasons. And then the karaoke bet, like, I you know,
just imagine, like, just belting out How to Save a Life by The Fray on an episode of The Catechin.
Oh, God. And then I just, you know, blow your minds, and everyone's like, damn, let's go.
Has He Been Gone by Kelly Clarkson.
There we go. See? See, guys? Content.
I kind of
need
this.
Now, I will do a bet wheel for something that I'm confident will happen. I guess I'm not doing it against somebody, but I will spin the wheel right now. And I don't know how to share my screen on here, so we're just going to have to do
House Honor. Yeah.
Because I want to do the bet wheel. My bet is that Caleb Wilson will be a cat, because, I mean, obviously. Right? Right?
If he's okay, not, you gotta, hit the wheel. You gotta hit the wheel three times if he goes somewhere else now. That's a three banger. That's you get three of those hosts.
I mean it's all but done, right? He took Arkansas off the final five. I don't know if you saw the picture he posted. He was only smiling in the Kentucky jersey. Yeah. It was front and center.
Yeah, Tipton wasn't super slick on that one. It was pretty obvious.
On one of his posts, I think it may have been that one, where he said, "Where is home?" Caden just responded, LOL.
I kind of want to do a bet wheel on the Kentucky-Texas game just because I was, like, pretty adamant about but I feel, dog, I mean, it's going to be the end of me in the podcast, right? Like, you get that karaoke bet, and I'm just going to buy, you know. I'll come back later as Gaden Butts again, you know. you know, Esquire. Dude.
Should I add one that you get to write the intro for a podcast if you do a bet wheel? Because that's a positive one.
Well, for you it is. For the less creative of the group, that's stressful.
That's homework.
It's just gonna be bad. I mean, I can do it. It won't be good.
Do you want to do it for the Texas spread?
I'm thinking about it. But what if I win? Like, what if, like, what I just, I'm off the hook kind of thing?
If you win, then I do what it is.
Oh, like we go 1v1 here.
The two of us, loser has to do the.
This is an adversarial system.
Oh, that's so tough, because you know they're going to get three touchdowns. Dude, now I'm not confident at all.
I love the
bet
wheel.
It is absolutely the ultimate equalizer here, because I am not. I am, like, you know, money, you know, put $100. All right, I'm sure I'll take the under. I'll take the Kentucky and the points. But a
now
karaoke bet. More than that? everything, dude. That's tough. Texas, almost like the Louisville one. I'd almost like pick Louisville to win that game on a wheel bet.
Do you want to? Would you rather just do Kentucky Louisville on the bet wheel? Because I'm taking the Cats. I'm a Kentucky fan.
Me too. But if you said, is BYU or Utah State going to win in football this year, I'm going to say BYU, because I've been wrong about everything, and Utah State would win. I'd have to do a damn karaoke bet. So I don't know. Do we spin the wheel at the outcome, or like beforehand? Like, well, am I going to sweat this for 2 weeks knowing
full
well?
You and I are going to lock in. If you agree to do it, we're going to lock in right now. So we are pot committed to whatever this wheel lands on that the loser has to do.
Gosh, and we're doing it on the Louisville. I'm not doing it on the Utah or on the Texas spread. There's no way, dude. Like, that's way too up in the air. But when was the last time Louisville won in this series?
2017.
Okay. Probably. Oh, but then if they. I feel wrong. I feel like I'd be pissed if you guys were like betting on like BYU or something like against me. I'd be like kind of angry about that. I don't know if I want to pick Louisville, but also I kind of do. I think they're gonna win.
And it's the bet wheel.
Oh, that's why I'm hesitant. Is because
that's
it's the bet wheel. That
sweet content, baby.
All right. So yeah. So Louisville last won in 2017. They didn't. I don't know why this one isn't blue. Yeah, Louisville last won in 2017.
Okay, here we go. I got it. Bro. They've only played that many times? Why haven't they played that much?
Well, it looks like they started in 1912, went for a couple years, skipped a little bit.
Then went 70 years between 24 and 94?
Wild. Then picked it back up in 1994.
We're doing this bet wheel or not, bud?
We don't have the spread yet. Are we doing just straight up?
No, straight up. Yeah, money line.
And it's not this week, it's next week?
Yes, sir.
November 30th. Oh, so I was looking at it. The reason I said one wasn't blue is that Kentucky vacated all of their 2021 wins.
Oh, yeah.
Forgot about that one.
And where's the game at this year?
Lexington.
We lose at home, though. We
do lose at home. I mean, Dog, it's the karaoke one that's got me cooked. Like, everything else I can deal.
Fork and toaster. You go with fork and toaster?
I volunteer fork and toaster over, like, three of those things. Like, I just take the zap and just move on with my life.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. All right, let's run with it.
All right, here we go. I'm spinning it.
I swear, it's karaoke wheel. I'm leaving this podcast.
It's buffering. You need to
get like a real wheel.
It's buffering on me.
Exactly why you need a real wheel.
Yeah. Real wheel. Let's just wait till we get a real wheel.
The Howard Schnellenberger Award winner last year was J.J. Weaver with 2 fumble recoveries, 8 solo tackles, and a sack. That's a nice performance.
All right, here we go. Ready?
No.
Tick, 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 tick. It's a puppet bat.
Thank God.
It's a puppet bat.
Oh, okay, lucky. Right. Lucky.
Let's go. Okay, I'm good with that. Yeah. Oh, my God. Thank you. I was hoping for that or soup kitchen or, like, literally anything but the damn karaoke bit. Like, made me stand for a half hour. I don't care. Thing, like, the way you phrased it with How to Save Life by the Fray, like, made me want to just play freeze tag on the freeway.
The bat wheel feels good.
Mm.
All right, fellas, any closing thoughts before we wrap this bad boy up?
Louisville, come on now. We'll talk before then, but my God. Let's go. When do we get the puppets, though? We gotta get those puppets going.
Yeah. We'll get it to you. So I guess we'll see everybody on Saturday. Please like and subscribe. A lot of attention on the last video. That was very cool.
We really appreciate that.
But we are, you know, the algorithm is our overlords now. So please like and subscribe. And hey, send to a friend, man. Send to someone in need. Guys, any closing thoughts?
No. Go Cats.
Also, another thing I'll say, give us feedback. Leave comments. Let us know what you like, what you don't like. Do you prefer the instant reactions? Do you like the longer form midweek stuff? Just let us know what you like, what you want to hear more of. Should we talk about stats? Should we talk about stats not at all?
That's a good point.
Recruiting. I mean, just let us know. We really don't have a good sense yet of what the people want to hear.
Yeah, I'm eager Perfect. To please. All right. And with that, thank you for joining the Catechin. Go Cats.
Go Cats.